Hello, everyone, and welcome back to SCADcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Matt Nickley. An artist's relationship with the truth is seldom black and white. What's being shown may be a mask for something hidden. It could be a glimpse at the iceberg's tip, or maybe it's the 90% below the surface making a rare appearance. It's this range of possibilities that invite audiences into exhibitions and calls on them to take in a work that is dynamic while remaining static, complex in its simplicity, abstract in its naturalness. Renowned painter David Casson relishes these contradictions in painting. His dedication to study and compassion for his subjects are undeniable in every artwork. Casson's representational style results in life-size paintings that capture the full scope of human expression. They are portraits you can stand across and learn from. You feel as though you're having a conversation. Today's interview was recorded in January when Casson made his most recent in-person visit to SCAD to hold workshops and lectures for our students. He also mentored students virtually during our online spring quarter. Paula Wallace caught up with Casson and reflected on his exhibition, Facing Survival, a portrait series honoring survivors of the Holocaust. The paintings are celebrations of life, beacons of hope, lessons in courage. From SCADcast, this is On Creativity, a conversation between Paula Wallace and David Casson.
Thank you for the book.
Yeah, no problem.
Absolutely beautiful.
Thanks for the flowers. That was incredible.
Well, thanks so much for being an educator here at SCAD this week, David. Malcolm Gladwell famously said it takes 10,000 hours to be good at something, to master something. So how long would you say it's taken you to be a master at portrait painting?
Yeah, no, I studied really hardcore in college for about 4 years. And then when I got out of school, I felt inadequate at the university that I went to and went back to school for another 5 or 6 years, just painting from life, which is amazing that you guys have so many life sessions going on. Mm-hmm. I was quizzing the students. I was like, if you're doing this painting and you don't like it, that you're painting from life, mm-hmm. you shouldn't remember this 2 weeks. If you remember this painting in 2 weeks, you're not painting enough.
Mm, not painting enough. Yeah.
And so the students that I've noticed that are really like striving in what they're doing are going to all the life drawing sessions. The illustration majors are going to painting fine art. And the fine artists are going to the illustration and sequential and animation classes to learn how to do things.
And the foundation students.
Yeah. I didn't have that as a student in my school. Mm-hmm. And so to see it here, I was telling them how lucky they are to be here, to have that resource.
Thank you.
It was pretty incredible. But to answer your question more accurately, I guess, would be, you know, I think of it as not just necessarily 10,000 hours, but
yes.
miles and miles of canvas.
Oh.
So it's getting that experience of just painting a lot mm-hmm. on a lot of surfaces and getting kind of the 10,000 miles of canvas under your belt, you know, as a painter.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great time to be a fine artist. What are the steps that you've taken to reach the pinnacle that you're at today?
Let me think about this. I think it's funny. I don't feel like I'm at a pinnacle.
Well, you're much admired, and your work is just, you know, so sublime, really.
Thanks.
And so evocative of people's stories and lives, and so important.
I think that I have been very lucky that I've gained a lot of technical aspects of painting pretty quickly, mm-hmm. and that became very intuitive. And so I have a confidence in knowing that I can get something that I want on the canvas. And so that's kind of opened me up to really painting the stories of the people that I'm mm-hmm. painting and find interesting people whose stories are important that might be lost if I'm not there to paint it.
Yes.
And so that kind of marrying concept and understanding and meaning and just love for humanity mm-hmm. into the technical aspect that I've been developing as an artist has kind of helped me, I think. It makes the paintings more than just something surface in a painting. It makes it into a historic document, makes it into kind of a sacred object that you can't delete or you can't ignore or something. The paintings I want to do, I want them to be indelible. especially for the subject that I'm painting, because numbers have shifted so much. They say millennials now don't know how many Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. And so we're losing that history, unfortunately. And the people who are firsthand witnesses to it, unfortunately, we're losing every day. And so it scares me to find out.
You feel an urgency about this work in particular.
Yes. There's a very, I'm kind of like on heightened alert of like just focusing on this aspect right now and trying to learn these stories. And then eventually I think that'll also help my work in the future after I move on from this subject as well.
Yeah. How did you choose Sam Godowski for the cover?
Yeah, Sam was like the first painting I did in the series.
Oh, really?
It didn't start out as a series of paintings. It started out as I had been asked to paint a commission for a friend of mine who's a collector of mine in Israel. And he said that he'd love to commission me to do his portrait of his mother-in-law. And I was kind of, I don't do portrait commissions at all, so I don't really consider myself a portrait painter necessarily. I'm a painter with portraits in the paintings.
Yes.
But the, and all my scale is all life size. So I was kind of saying, well, I appreciate you like my work, but I don't really do commissions. And he goes, well, it's my mother-in-law. She's very special. She's a survivor of the Shoah, of the Holocaust. And I was like, I'll paint her. But it's not a commission. And I'd love to film her, interview her in her living room to get to know her better and do the painting. And you guys can purchase the painting if you want and collect the painting or not. I just want to show it and tell her story. And so he went to her and showed her my artwork. And unfortunately, she didn't want to be painted by me, which is totally understandable because my paintings are very raw and they are almost like a Lucian Freud painting. Like, I don't know if people would want to be painted by Lucian Freud necessarily, you know? So, I mean,
more so by you though.
I don't know. But that idea of having that subject, my grandfather escaped ethnic cleansing in 1917 to come to America.
Really?
And from the pogroms that were happening in Romania. And so I never got to meet my grandfather or hear his story firsthand. And so I thought that getting to know these subjects was a way of connecting with him.
Definitely.
And so I had been teaching in Israel about 3 months prior. And one of my students from Israel had visited me in my studio in Brooklyn. And I was telling her the story about how I could have done this painting of the survivor. And she's like, well, both my parents are survivors. One lives in New Jersey, in Fort Lee, New Jersey, which is Sam. And her parents were split up. And her mom lived in Forest Hills, Queens. And so they were pretty much the grassroots start of the project. Wow. And so I painted Sam first. Yeah. And his story was so intriguing and incredible that I was like, I'm going to kind of devote more time. Devote any grants that I can write and get funding for to make films and maybe make a documentary eventually and really capture the stories before we don't have them anymore.
Very important.
Yeah.
Why do you choose to paint life size?
Yeah, great question. I don't actually think of my paintings as paintings. I want people to have a conversation with them just like we are. To me, you're life size. You know, if I painted you, it would be exactly...
Well, I'm almost life-size.
Yeah, no, you're totally life-size. yeah, so like your scale, with someone coming to see you, they could have a conversation with you one-to-one. I don't like my paintings being hung really high either. I want them to be hung at eye level with people so that you can have that interaction with the subject as if you're talking to them, as if we're talking. You know, I'm life-size to you and vice versa. And in painting, I think there's three aspects of a painting. There's the subject, there's the artist, and then there's the viewer. And I feel that the artist is kind of in between the subject and the viewer. And so I almost want to take myself out of that aspect of the painting and make it about the viewer and the subject. So my brushwork within my painting is there to serve the subject. And any emotion that I have within a painting is based on the subject and not my own. So I'm not a John Singer Sargent, who I greatly admire, but he's all about that bravura stroke and everything. And that's so him getting into the painting that I feel like that kind of takes you away from the subject. Because the paintings nobody knows even the names mostly of the Sargent paintings. They just know it's a John Singer Sargent painting.
Lady X.
Yeah. Oh, that painting's amazing. That used to be in the Met in their storage facility and you could see it eye to eye. Usually they hang it really high in the Met and you only see the feet, you know? So as artists, we want to get in there and see like the edges and the face and all that stuff. But yeah.
So I imagine you prefer to paint from life, but as we've been talking about, you also paint from photography or film. So do you take your own photos and film? And how do these references inform your paintings?
Yeah, no, I love painting from life because life has all the information you could ever want and the right color and everything's there. It's almost like Google, you know what I mean? Like it answers my questions that I have as a painter. Mm-hmm. But because of the survivors that I'm painting and their age, I've had to take photos. And so for me, being a very analog, kind of archaic painter, have had to learn how to use technology to be able to use photography in a way that I can get the information that I need in the studio to paint. So it's changed how I paint a little bit. I've gotten slower. With painting from life, you only have a certain amount of time and a certain amount of basically time with the individual that you're painting. By using photography, I have all the time in the world pretty much to paint. And fortunately, that makes my paintings, I never actually finish any paintings, I feel. I feel like there's this, a quote, a painting is never finished, it's only abandoned.
And there's but like, how do you know when to stop?
That's the thing, right? Like, you don't really. I mean, for me, painting stories, the people that I'm painting.
You've got an opening.
Yeah. Well, it's the people I'm painting, their stories are like great books. And me doing the painting is me connecting with it in a very meditative way that it's like a great book you don't want to put down. You know, you don't want to come to the end of it. It's not a race. As a painter, I've kind of learned over the course of my career, it's been 20 years, actually, I started showing at my gallery in New York. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make product at all. I'm there to make an experience for myself. So it is selfish for me to actually make these paintings in a really like basic way, because I just want to be there. I want to learn from these people. Painting is how I see the world, you know? And so this is something I find important that I get to share with people, you know? And so I don't know when a painting is ever finished. I mean, as I'm learning as a painter, I can go back to my older work and be like, I should make that better. You know, it's that, again, that kind of growth mindset of always being able to figure out things that are making me see the world better.
So you recently repainted yourself, right? And you had painted yourself years ago. Yeah. Is that 10-year challenge? Or maybe it wasn't quite 10 years in between, but what did you notice about either the process or yourself?
Yeah, no, that's great. I did a self-portrait. I painted my wife. We just got married in November, end of November. And so thanks. I've been calling her my fiance for like 4 years. So we got married. So I wanted to do a painting of her right after we got married. And then I decided to paint myself kind of as a reset because I had a big exhibit and I wanted to kind of step back from the survivors that I've been painting and the heaviness of what they're going through and what I've been painting to kind of reset myself and kind of find myself. And so I did a self-portrait again. All what I have noticed is that the reactions that people say, I made myself a lot older looking than I do. And maybe it's just kind of like, that's how I see myself, I guess, as opposed to how other people see me. It's been interesting. It's definitely been interesting. Yeah, I want to get back to that painting, actually. I'm still not finished.
Do you think the hands or the face are the bane of... What do you think is the hardest part for, like, a portraitist?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I never think of anything as being hard in a painting. I think
not for you, but for other people.
No, I think even just having that mindset of even thinking that anything would be kind of difficult, it kind of sets you back. I think as painters, we want to have clarity to our thought. And anytime you have anything negative in something that you love, it's counteractive. I don't even want to bring that concept into the picture.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah, but I think people do find hands hard or challenging. I think I would change the word.
Challenging.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, so I think that...
Why?
There's just a lot of stuff going on in them, you know, like the way the bones hit and the way that the skin is really interesting because everything inside of us is pushing out on our skin and there's different things pushing out. So there's blood in some areas, there's fluid, there's bones that are hitting, there's muscles that are hitting. And so understanding how each one hits the skin in certain ways, some are more are stronger than others, and just understanding how the anatomy works underneath the skin. Hands just have a lot going on, and they're small and delicate in a lot of cases. They get wrinkled faster because that's how we interact with the world. We're always picking up things. And so I think they have a little bit more weathering to them. Mm-hmm. And I think they're also really great as a portrait painter or as a painter. They tell a lot about the story of a person just as much as the face does mm-hmm. to me. And so for me, that I used to be really bad at painting hands. And
how did you get to be good?
Well, yeah. Great question. I think you get good at painting something that you find difficult by facing that challenge head on. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I found is that I had a lot of weaknesses in painting, things that I wanted to be able to paint better. And I've decided to kind of turn any weakness that I have as a painter into a strength.
Into a strength.
Yeah. And then your strengths become slightly weaknesses compared to what your weakness was. And then you just kind of seal yourself up and make you better at everything. And so it's kind of a growth mindset mm-hmm. of I'm not the most intelligent person, but I know that if I work really hard and I'm confident and I embrace any insecurities that I have as a painter, I can overcome them.
Wow. That's a whole lesson right there. Yeah. Well, in an era of digitalism and 3D technology, what is the unique role of a portrait artist?
Yeah, great question again. I think that so much about media today is deletable and just kind of surface and small. Like we look at things on our phones, which is, I think there's a double-edged, like it's amazing in a lot of cases because I can see what people are working on and I'm inspired by what's going on in people's studios.
We stay in touch and, you know, it's a great way to know what's going on in other people's lives that you care about.
Yes. No, I love that. Mm-hmm. And then, but how people see artwork though, it's kind of different. Mm. Like I paint everything life size and I want people to see it in real life. And I don't think that it's going to, I think being a slow painter and analog painter has its pluses though, because of all the media. Mm-hmm. I feel like it makes something more handmade. The art and paintings are things that you can't delete. And exactly. I love that aspect that, and they are life size. And so people have a different reaction to them when they see them in real life versus seeing things on a photo. Like people think I'm a photorealist painter because you're taking a photograph of my painting and they're posting it online. So they only see a photo representation of a painting that might be lifelike. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's an interesting thing. Digital media is great though. Like you promote yourself to get to meet interesting people, connect with people all over the world. My wife and I teach workshops. We teach workshops we were just in Australia at this time last year. Mm-hmm. And then the year before that, we were in South Africa and Cape Town. And so
see the world.
Yeah, we get to see the world and people get to see our work from there. Mm-hmm. I was always asking students, like, how did you hear about my work? And they all say, oh, I saw it on Instagram or I follow you on Instagram. Mm-hmm. At first, my wife and I thought it was kind of just fun to just post about our stupid things that we do. You know what I mean? Or a selfie with a kangaroo when we're in Australia or with a koala bear, mm-hmm. you know, especially. And now I want to paint them and help those people. Mm-hmm. You know, we're actually going to do a koala bear paint day where we're going to paint a koala bear each and we're going to just donate whatever the bids are. We're going to auction them off for mm-hmm. the fires that are going on.
You should come here and then get like 50 people to paint koala bears all on the same day.
That'd be amazing.
We could do that.
Yeah. I was thinking.
Met at least 50 who would do that today.
When I thought you said get 50 koala bears.
Oh, well, I don't know where we would get those.
Way too much cuteness.
Way too much cuteness. But maybe. I mean, I don't know. You know, SCAD has 3 museums on 2 continents. What do you think is the value of sharing art with adults and young people?
Yeah, I think especially today with the way the art world is moving more towards social issues, it's become amazing to actually go to a museum and not just see the surface and the technique of something, but to really learn about something, a culture that you don't necessarily interact with every day.
Yes.
You know, so people are posting and painting about their issues and museums are picking those up and really championing all these different cultural views and aspects. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it's a way of learning, a way of teaching. So you devoted at least 5 years of your life to creating the work and facing survival. There are so many stories inherent in this work and so many life lessons. What did you learn?
Yeah, I've learned that life is definitely faster than you think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It's more precious than you think it's going to be. You affect people in different ways. And it's almost like we're all little balls, like ping pong balls. And every time you meet somebody, you hit them either positively or negatively in certain ways. Like always try to hit people in positive ways when you interact with them. And just also nothing really is a problem or an issue
that can't be overcome. Compared to.
Yeah. Yeah. It really gives you perspective to see if you have a horrible relationship with a parent or something like that, you can overcome that because they're alive versus someone like some of these stories where people haven't even seen their parents since they were 5 years old. You know, it really, it makes humanity so much more precious, you know, and also the idea of speaking out and not being a bystander.
Mm, I agree. Well, you've been to SCAD several times. What's your impression of SCAD?
Oh, it's amazing. Thanks for having me. It's been
People were so excited to hear that you were coming back.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, it's incredible. Like, this is like the school that I wish I went to because of how creative it is and how you've like taken over the city and just made it bright and
it's all about
renovating
art here.
And just the art in the hotel or in the Magnolia Hall everywhere. It's just, there's like a real appreciation for the culture that I live, you know, in arts and the technology, and coming here is like a dream factory.
Mm.
You know, last time I was here, I saw like the 3D printing machines and all the facilities that you guys have. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Super jealous.
You spent your life as a representational painter. What do you see as the future of art? You think it's having like a resurgence right now? Representational painting.
Yeah. I think that there's as things become more digital, I think people are trying to get back to super basics, almost like a DIY like movement in a way, where people are painting digitally and then there's like a reaction against that in a way with certain atelier programs that are happening around the world where people are into slow painting and painting things that look like things. It's also, I think, fighting cameras and digital photography and all of that. A resurgence, I'm not sure. I think that I think we have to kind of still fight to get into museums to be taken seriously. And I think that one thing that Instagram, I think, kind of does, which is kind of bad, is that it kind of champions artwork that's not as serious when it comes to representational work. Like, there'll be paintings of celebrities or Captain Jack Sparrow, and kids are seeing that as aspects of realism. And that kind of gives real, it waters down representational art that has a meaning, that is for fighting for social causes and everything.
Yeah.
So I think just representational painters have to be smarter about what it is they choose to paint, because the technical aspects of painting can take over. You want to make that ear look right, and that stuff is very, very important to us. But then you don't want to lose sight of the purpose behind the work and the why. So I think when our why gets better, we'll be taken more seriously. But museums do take representational work pretty serious. I mean, like, Lucian Freud's incredible. You have Jeff Koons is a representational painter. You know what I mean? His work is representational.
Yeah.
Kehinde Wiley is a representational painter.
Of course he is.
You know? So you have, it's championed. I think it's hard for us to see ourselves in museums sometimes. Like, I've had a hard time with getting my show into museums. My goal is to have it at the Jewish Museum in New York someday. And having one of the museums was a contemporary museum in San Francisco didn't like my work because it was too realistic, which was kind of interesting. But I think it's all based on subjective people. Anybody can be subjective and have a different opinion of what art is and what it isn't, which makes art actually pretty amazing, you know? So
what's next on your horizon?
Yeah, so I'm kind of just stepping back a little bit, doing this reset for the project that I've been working on, painting myself, painting my family a little bit. And then I'm actually going to probably go full force into trying to do a painting of more survivors in New York City. So maybe another 20-foot or 18-foot painting of survivors in New York. I need to figure out a way to do it in a smart way where I can actually survive, like, financially, but then also trying to get people in New York City interested in having the show at the Jewish Museum or something comparable. The Shoah Foundation, I think, is behind me, and they want to exhibit the work because they've been helping me so much to get these stories, to be able to meet people. They helped fund me to go to Toronto, Warsaw, and London to meet with survivors. I'm also trying to get out to South Africa and Australia, and actually out to Shanghai to meet survivors, this kind of diaspora of survivors where people have gone and thrived. And
they've had to reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, what a life to live.
Yeah, no, what's really incredible is they're kind of like, oh, you know, I've had
different
all this
country,
stuff.
Different language, yes. Different profession, you know, different life.
Yeah. And that's what I find
and
inspiring.
To have survived in the first place.
Yeah, the that's what everyone's like, you do Holocaust survivors. Are you like really depressed person? Are you really down? I'm like, no, I find the lives that they've lived for the 75 years after what they've been through insanely inspiring. The families that they've grown.
Yes.
There's a photograph of a survivor at the Western Wall in Israel, and he had all of his family with him. And there were like hundreds of siblings and children and grandchildren.
And they wouldn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
but for his survival.
Yeah. And that's so inspiring.
Yeah, it really is. What were some of the best questions that you got asked this week by the students?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like when I teach, I want to almost have people just go back to basics and think of just shape and form. And, that was pretty much, they were kind of stunned by that because they think I'm a detailed painter. Mm-hmm. And so they would go for detail and I kept trying to have them step back. And so I think they kept asking why, why you want me to step back and get the details. It's because you have to build that foundation of a face first. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of put the quote unquote details on them. I don't even think of that word as even fitting to my work. It's just levels of understanding.
Levels of understanding.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, come back anytime.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
I'm so delighted to have you here. And thank you so much for educating our students.
Yeah, what you've built here has been incredible.
Thank
it's
you.
Really incredible.
Thank
it's
you.
It's a dream factory.
Thank you. A dream
so
factory.
Cool.
I love it. I love it.
Incredible. Thanks
Art
again.
Is our world. It's kind of an international United Nations of art here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have over 100 countries. So students do have a lot of opportunity here, and meeting you is one of the highlights.
Oh, thanks. It's an honor. It really is. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from David Kasson. You can see more of his work and learn from his tutorials at davidkasson.com. It can be a very challenging exercise, but consider how you would frame and design your self-portrait. How would you express yourself? What might you alter? What would you bring to the surface? And what might you mask? Be sure to keep an eye on the Guests in Gusto events page at scad.edu. to find out about and participate in upcoming interviews and virtual artist visits. Thank you, as always, to tuning in to SCADcast and On Creativity, executive produced by SCAD president and founder Paula Wallace, with original music by SCAD alumnus George Lovett. On behalf of the entire SCAD community, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay active. We'll see you next time.